One objective, Taren growls as we near the battle. Decide our fate. Glane launches toward Cure despite the order to shelter. I nod to myself, then rip my gaze away, focusing northward on the tornado and its creator. Time to do what Imogen suggested months ago and delegate. She'll rip the very sky apart before she and Glane accept defeat. One objective. Fly for Theophany.
An excerpt from the last words of Trisilla Cardullo, redacted. Fuck you. My daughter and I will meet Malik with clean consciences. Will you and your daughters be able to say the same when they come for you? Chapter 63. Imogen. If chaos were a place, it would be Drathus. Rain beats against the glass of my goggles as Glane climbs toward the three wyvern, trying their best to rip Cure apart. The steep angle of her chosen approach makes it hard as hell to stay seated, but I'm not going to tell her to slow. Not that she'd listen anyway. Bodhi's in trouble. I grit my teeth. He doesn't get it. If we lose both him and Ryerson, Tirindor falls to whomever the king appoints. I'd rather die than see a Navarian aristocrat on the burned throne Mom and Katrina died defending. The flame of perpetual rage that lives in my chest burns hotter. Fuck that horde. Fuck the Venon who ride them. Fuck that unholy vortex of a tornado at the end of the northern field. And fuck the orders to stay grounded in these winds. We're not losing Bodhi. There are still too many wyvern, despite the inhuman amount Sorengale just dispatched. And where the fuck is Ryerson? He'd better be helping in the northeastern tower, because I haven't seen a trace of a shadow in the last 20 minutes. Kruth reports we did not bring a sufficient supply, Glane warns, relaying Quinn's message from the armory in the turret below. God damn it! We brought two cases! Enough to start a war within our own kingdom, considering Ryerson has been withholding our forge's weapons from King Tari. Newerlock says they've sent for more. She doesn't sound hopeful. From 4 hours away? How? Oh, shit. Felix knows about Garrick. Gods, he has to be nearing burnout at this point. Then we hold out and pray Sorengale can stop that fucking storm. Kruth also relays that you should be drinking more water, as we've been in combat longer than hoped for. I scoff. Tell Kruth to tell Quinn that I'm perfectly fine. It figures she's worried about me while she's the one doing all the work. Glane's head snaps upward. Cure suffers, she warns me in that gnawing tone that usually means she's about to do something impetuous. And sure enough, she angles her wings and climbs even higher at a nearly 90-degree angle. Shit. I slip my boots back to the next scale ridge and adjust my hold. Lying along Glane's back, tucking my head beneath her pommel and pressing my cheek to her scales helps cut the wind resistance against my torso as we climb. It's a mistake to look down at the burning city, but I can't help but track two wyvern crossing our airspace below. Cath launches, and I blink in surprise. Guess Atos is all about breaking rules now. Brace, Glane warns. It's more than I usually get. Her momentum shifts, slowing for a nauseating second, and I clamp every muscle and mold myself to her spine, changing our shape from rider and dragon to one being. She's pulled this maneuver too many times for me not to recognize how shitty this is about to be. She attacks from underneath, all teeth and claws, then tucks her wings to protect them and swings her tail upward. I concentrate on moving with her, fighting gravity as I'm hung upside down and her dagger tail slices into the next wyvern. Blood sprays, coloring the rain red. My grip loosens despite my rubber-coated gloves, and I grimace, forcing my fingers further between her scales. Any time now! Fine, she sighs. Then we plummet. The force of the fall pushes me against her scales, effectively holding me in place as she drags the wyvern from the sky. Bone cracks, flesh rends, and she tosses the carcass like yesterday's trash. The gray mass falls like a stone to the right, and Glane rolls, putting me on top of her back instead of under it. 17, she counts. Pretty sure it was 16. I pull myself upward, using her scales like a ladder until my ass hits the seat, and I drag my arm across my goggles to clear the rain. There has to be a rune somewhere that will keep the fucking lenses clear. The first one counted, she argues as we surge toward Cure and the remaining wyvern. Kath took that first one. Only after I wounded it, Glane snaps. Still not a kill. My stomach tenses as I get my first good look at what we're up against. Cure swings his sword tail again and again, keeping the wyvern at his back at bay, but there's a deep, bleeding furrow cutting diagonally across his chest. No doubt gifted by the claws of the wyvern at his front. I want them all. Glane's head swivels in both directions. Go for the one at his back, I suggest, and hope she's in the mood to listen. Never know with her. Excellent choice, she agrees with a macabre tone of glee. Bodhi has his sword in hand, but there's no clear shot for him as the trio starts to spiral downward. At this angle, we'll intercept them head on. I draw my own sword and clench Glane's pommel scales with one hand. My thighs are strong enough to hold on their own, but she's anything but predictable, and I'm not in the mood to die. Blue fire engulfs Cure from snout to horns, and Bodhi ducks his head as the remnants of the flame roll down Cure's neck, extinguishing to smoke before they reach him. I inhale swiftly to dispel the sudden tightness in my chest. That was way too damn close. Then I focus on the top wyvern, looking for areas of weak. Glane diverts, banking left to follow Cure's spiral, then lunges at the wyvern clawing at his belly. Changed my mind. Obviously. Glane hits the wyvern like a battering ram, and I hold tight, whipping forward, then back at the sudden shift in velocity. My pulse jumps as we push forward to the unmistakable sound of ripping scales. But there's only determination and rage pouring down the bond, not pain. An enormous head appears over Glane's shoulder. And for a split second, fetid, dripping teeth are all I can see snapping toward me. Fuck that nonsense. Stay level, I tell Glane, standing on the seat beneath me. Then I run up the slippery scales of her neck, passing the snarling teeth that part long enough for a jet of blue fire to rush across Glane's back. Good thing I moved. Before it can go for her throat, I thrust my sword into its eye and shove with all my strength. The blade plunges through the softer flesh with a sickening squish. Its high-pitched scream rings in my head like a bell, and I debate my life choices when it wrenches its head back, nearly taking me with it. My fist catches on the steel ball at the top of the sword's hilt, and I lock my grip as the wyvern falls away. Glane dives after the plummeting heap of scales and wings, and I fall backward, my ass hitting every ridge of her neck before colliding with her pommel scales. Are you kidding me? I heave myself into the seat, then lock into a position my muscles are more familiar with, sword still in hand. Red flashes by on the right. Kath. Did you fall off? No, I did not bond a whiner. She chases the wyvern down through the rain, then latches onto its neck and rips its throat out. I throw my weight left and narrowly miss being sprayed by blood. 18, she declares, flaring her wings to pull out of the dive and point us back to the northern wall. 17, if we're going by your measurement, since I wounded it first. Another lump of gray falls in a blur ahead of us, and I look up to see Kath and Cure descending toward us. There's a hole in Cure's right wing, and the laceration on his chest is going to leave a scar, but I can't tell at this angle if Bodhi is wounded. Glane's head swivels as a blue fire wyvern circumvents the city to the south, sending a row of trees up in flames. That one. Not our airspace. Kaori and the other officers hold the eastern, southern, and western territory, which is swiftly becoming the epicenter of the battle due to the winds. but they're down their most powerful rider, Garrick. And there's no sign of Crod in sight. For someone so decisive, you have yet to act on that, Glane starts to lecture. Stop right there, and I'll agree your kill count is 18. My ribs tighten as we descend toward the city. The Venon are done fucking around. They've come themselves. Blue flame swirls down the spiral tower, courtesy of two wyvern climbing its sides, and the fire whips outward as a dark wielder in gaudy scarlet robes sweeps her staff in a circle from the top of the landmark. Griffins launch with their flyers toward the threat. A sinking feeling pools in my stomach. There are too many of them, and we're already exhausted. Beyond the three felled dragons, four more lie wounded along the walls to the west, beside innumerable griffins. Their bleeding riders do their best to tend to them, and I look away from what's likely a fatal wound on a severed tail on a large brown. Orders? I've always known I'll die in combat. I just don't want it to be today. The tower, Glane shouts. Quinn. My head snaps toward the left and my heart somersaults. One dark wielder in purple robes strides down the eastern city walls like he owns them, and another in crimson fighting leathers approaches along the northern. Both are headed for the turret, where the only person I truly love on this battlefield is working. And she probably doesn't even know they're coming. Relay to Kruth! Already done. Glane's wings beat as quickly as my heart as we move toward the walls. There's nothing we can do from the air. I'm going to have to dismount. Glane growls. You know it's true, and I'm not leaving her to die. I sheathe my sword and move to her shoulder, despite the roaring wind shoving at my back. Orders can come later. I have to go now. Infantry soldiers fight to intercept the dark wielders and are flung from the walls like inconsequential dolls. The guards plummet 50 feet to their deaths, clearing the path for the Venon. Terror saturates my lungs and my heart pounds. You are to defend the tower from the walls with the wing leader, Glane relays with a disagreeing snarl, banking left for a parallel approach. Great, get me on the wall now. The dark wielders are less than 30 feet from the door of the turret, and the two remaining guards in the crossbolt launch platform above look ready to flee. Damn it! They were supposed to be safe! No one was supposed to know, but the purposeful strides of those dark wielders prove they know what's happening in that tower. Your death would annoy me. Glane slows just enough so I'll survive and extends her foreleg as she flies along the northern wall. Same! I race down the scales of her unwounded leg. There's no time for fear, no room for mistakes. Not when Quinn is being hunted. Reaching Glane's talons, I leap into the rain without hesitation. My pounding heart fills my ears while I'm airborne, and the northern wall rushes up to meet me. I bend my knees to absorb the coming impact, then run the second my boots hit the stonework so the momentum doesn't kill me. I hurtle forward and narrowly avoid falling on my face on the wet expanse of cobblestone as I sprint toward the back of the Venon in crimson. There's 40 feet between us. 30. Commotion erupts from the base of the tower, but I focus on the dark wielder and the staff he carries in his right hand. They are evacuating the weapons by foot, Glane says from somewhere above me. Good. My lungs burn, but I breathe a little easier. Quinn will be safe. Another set of footsteps joins mine, and a flash of metal sparks in the corner of my eye. Atos catches up on my right, half his face drenched in blood, bearing his own dagger and a shield half his size. Shit, that's not good. 20. I channel my rage, rejecting any notion of fear, and draw one of my alloy-hilted daggers from the sheath at my arm in preparation to strike. We're almost there. The dark wielder pivots, whipping to face us with an unnatural speed even I can't match, and swings his staff in our direction. Fire erupts, barreling toward us in a deadly stream. And I weigh our options for all of a millisecond as we skid to a halt. It hits, we die. Jump, we die. You will not burn, Glane demands. Fuck. I really didn't want to have to do this. But I mentally open the door to my childhood home and flood my body with her power. Get! Atos starts to yell. Get behind me! I shout, ripping the shield from his grip. His eyes flare wide and he lets go. We have seconds. So I flip the shield, then slam its flat top between the row of stones at our feet and drop behind it, keeping my hand on the leather strap. Atos jumps behind me as power rushes into my fingers so quickly I clench my teeth to keep from screaming. Heat surrounds us, and the leather hardens in my grip as the shield turns to stone. Fire roars, blazes, flows around us. We are the rock in the river, demanding the water part. The heat dissipates as the blast ends, and Atos dives to the left and throws. An aloe-hilted dagger sails from his hand, and I rise, clutching my own. The dark wielder's expression of shock remains permanent as he desiccates a few feet away and falls off the wall. One down. But the guards are missing from the top of the turret, and I see a flash of purple disappear into the tower. Worse, another dressed in crimson strides along the eastern wall. Atos jumps to his feet and draws his remaining dagger. I'll take that one. You get the one in the tower. He glances at the stone shield, then breaks into a run, and I follow, sprinting as fast as I can. And we're going to talk about whatever the fuck that just was later, he shouts over his shoulder. But I've already passed him, using lesser magic to boost my speed. Kruth roars, sweeping from the sky to the city below. But Drathus is just like other Paromish cities, designed to keep dragons from landing within its narrow streets. Two women carrying crying toddlers stumble out of the turret's doorway, horror etched on their faces. The taller one's gaze swings to mine as I reach them. You have to help her. We got lost and went into the wrong tower, and she... Go west, I shout, pointing in the direction I've just come from, as Atos runs past to intercept the other dark wielder. And run! They nod and do just that. I fling myself through the doorway into the tower and blink, struggling to adjust to the dimmer lighting as I descend the spiral staircase down and down and down, looking for whomever they left behind. Where are you? A raspy roar of frustration fills the tower, and my heart surges into my throat as I round the bend of the third story. Purple robes spin as the Venon turns on the landing, swiping a green-tipped dagger at Quinn, as she flashes in and out of space, appearing in front of him, only to disappear within seconds and pop up somewhere else. There are two of her. No, three circling the dark wielder. She isn't here. She's projecting. Relief nearly cuts me at the knees. I pause just out of sight and lean over the railing to scan the stairs below, but I don't see her. She's probably buildings away with Felix, setting up a new armory. I adjust my grip on the dagger, then creep down the steps to get within throwing distance. Wait. The Quinn, a handful of stairs beneath me, has her labyrinth strapped to her back and is actually moving closer to the infuriated dark wielder, who thrashes wildly with his dagger, while other versions of Quinn dance around him, serving as the diversion. I flip my dagger and throw. At the same moment, Quinn lunges with her own, and the pale-haired Venon spins. His eyes light up, then glass over as he turns gray and shrivels, collapsing at Quinn's feet with two daggers in his chest. Got him! I lift my hands in victory and hop down the rest of the steps as Quinn turns toward me, her dark green eyes impossibly wide as she looks at her chest. No. The Venon's blade is lodged between her ribs in the vicinity of her heart. The world around me slows as she sways toward the wall, her horrified gaze finding mine. No! I shout, throwing myself at her, so it's me she falls against, and my back scrapes stone as we slide to the floor of the step. I cradle her as carefully as I can, locking my right arm around her back so she doesn't fall. Quinn! No! Did they make it? Her voice breaks as she stares up at me, blood spreading into the layers of her uniform through her flight jacket along the blade. We can fix this, I promise. And suddenly it's so fucking hard to breathe. We just need to get you to Amender. Did they make it? She repeats, resting her head against the top of my arm. The women, the kids, they hadn't been telling me they'd left someone behind. They were telling me she'd saved them. Yeah, I nod as my eyes burn and my throat tightens. They made it. You got them out. Good. A soft smile pulls at her mouth. Hold on, all right? We need to get you some help. I look up and down the staircase, but we're alone. Someone has to be close by. Atos, maybe? Get us some help, I scream toward Glain.
I'm sorry, she says, more gently than I've ever heard, ever wanted to hear.
There's no helping me, Quinn whispers. That's not true. I shake my head and my vision blurs. Quinn will be fine. A world doesn't exist where she isn't fine, isn't laughing with Jax or hanging off my bed with her curls hitting the floor so she can get a head rush while she lectures me about feelings. A roar vibrates the stone at my back. Kruth. There are no menders here, and no runes for this, she says with that damned reassuring smile of hers. This is one thing you can't fix, Jen. Her face contorts with pain, and I swear I feel it in my own chest, rending muscle and stripping my veins before it passes and her breaths grow shallow. I need you to tell Jax that I love her. No. I wipe away the tear that slides from my eye before it can reach her hair. You tell her. You're going to graduate in a couple of months, and then you'll marry her in that pretty black dress you picked out, and you're going to be happy. Tell her. She's been the best part of my life. Her mouth curves, and she glances past me. You don't count, Kruth. You became my life. She brings her gaze back to mine, and the color drains from her face. Please, Jen. She's with the officers in the south, and I won't. I nod. I'll tell her. This can't be real, can it? How can this be real? Thank you, she whispers and relaxes against me, her blink slowing. Tell my parents it was worth it. I'm glad it's you with me. Parapet to Malik's own doorstep. I'm so sorry. I have to go first this time. Her breathing garbles. And you should tell him, Jen. Tell him. And you find some happy. Quinn. My voice shatters. Don't go. Don't leave me. I beg, wiping another tear as my vision blurs and clears. You're my best friend, and I love you. Please stay. This is not how she ends. Not in some dark stairwell in Drathus. It can't be. I'm the one who's supposed to fall. She's supposed to live forever. You're mine, and I love you too. Her smile slips and another tear falls. I'm scared. I don't want to be scared. My face twists, but I mask it. Don't be scared. I shake my head and force a smile. My mom will take care of you. And Katrina, too. My mouth quivers. She's a little bossy, but she'll be thrilled to have another little sister. I talk about you all the time. They'll know who you are. Don't be scared. Her next breath is strained and watery. They'll know me. I nod. They'll know you, and they'll love you. It's impossible not to love you. Imogen, she whispers, and her eyes flutter shut. I'm right here, I promise. But I can't force the words any louder as my throat closes. We made it a good one. She falls limp. And when I lift my shaking fingers to her throat, there's no pulse.
She's gone. My hand slides to the side of her head and I hold her tight. The scream that forces its way through the tangled mass of my throat shreds my soul on the way out and reverberates off the stone, shaking the foundations of my world until it doesn't just slow, it stops. I stop.
Hi, I'm Quinn Hollis. I've decided we should be friends.
That's what she said to me as we climbed the turret on conscription day.
You do realize we're about to cross the walkway of death. Well, then it might be a short friendship, but we'll make it a good one.
I stare at the other side of the staircase, locked in the memory, watching as the stones begin to pale, then lose their color one by one, each loss higher than the last. My heart somehow continues to beat, marking what I used to think of as time, and color disappears from the stones in the bend beneath us so gradually that I can't help but wonder if Quinn simply took the color with her.
Quinn! Someone bellows from above, and footsteps thunder. Where are you? We have to go!
There's a deep intake of breath to my left.
Imogen? Oh, fuck!
My head turns slowly toward the voice, and Garrick crouches on the step above us, his hazel gaze locking on mine and filling with so much misery, so much sympathy, that it overflows my own eyes, and wetness streams down the sides of my cheeks. She's dead. Saying it doesn't make it feel any more real. His face falls.
I'm so sorry.
He glances down the staircase.
But we have to go. There's half a dozen of them with their hands on the city walls, draining the life out of the stone. It's time to go.
I hold her tighter, unable to fathom the concept of moving. Like there's some minuscule chance she'll return if I just wait here long enough. I can't just leave.
I am with you. You may not die, Glane growls.
Garrick's square jaw flexes. You have to. We have to go, or they'll drain us too.
I'm not leaving her. I'm not leaving you.
He leans in and slides his hand behind my neck.
I'm not leaving you, Imogen,
he repeats, softer this time.
We'll take Quinn, but we have to go now. Let me have her.
I notice the circles beneath his beautiful eyes, the unusual pallor of his complexion. He's exhausted. And for the first time in my life, I don't care that he's seeing me at my weakest, because he's right there too. My chin tips in a nod.
All right.
He moves quickly to the step beneath us, kicking something out of the way and gathering both of us into his arms. I lock mine around Quinn so she doesn't slip as we're lifted off the floor, and the landing beneath us loses its color.
Let's get you out of here.
He takes a single step. Heat and light force my eyes shut as my stomach careens. When I open them, we're somewhere else. Rain falls through an open doorway and the scent of smoke and sulfur fills my lungs.
Oh, gods!
Professor Trissa gasps as Garrick sets Quinn and me down on a warm stone floor in a nondescript building. A store, maybe? Quinn's body slides and he helps lay her beside me, cushioning her head with his hand.
Venon, Garrick explains her loss with a single word. Are you weaving? He asks Trissa.
We're starting.
Her gaze darts over me. They'll be weak until we can bolster with more power, but they're our best shot.
It's still not enough.
Garrick's head hangs as he stands.
I can't.
He sighs and strides through the door. I obey the simple instinct to follow, shoving myself to my feet and forcing my body to move. There's a battle. We're in a war. Malik might claim more lives. I follow him past the little room where Felix works, beside cases of alloy-hilted daggers, all imbued, all humming with power. Then I step outside into the rain and stare. Houses burn.
Wyvern and griffin bodies lie in the middle of crumpled roof lines. Civilians scream. Kruth sails through the sky and takes a wyvern straight to the ground. Bodhi is on his hands and knees across the town square, retching. If dark wielders are draining the city walls, where next?
Where are you going? I shout at Garrick's back. I can't walk again. Even if I made it to Arisha, I'd never be strong enough to get back, he calls over his shoulder. So, I better find some fucking way to do something.
I unsheathe my last alloy-hilted dagger and stare up at the wyvern-filled sky. Then I make my way back inside, slip Quinn's last dagger from her thigh sheath, and reach for Glane. Tell every rider within the walls to get over here and disarm. It's the only way we're living through this. Outside, the sky darkens further. Sorengale better take their leader all the way the fuck out, or this will all have been for nothing.
Recovered correspondence of High Priestess Deserve to His Royal Highness, Cadet Arik Greycastle, Prince Camlane of Navarre. A gift from one servant of Dune to another. I must warn you, only those touched by the gods should wield their wrath. I will pray to her that she need not use it to avoid reacquainting herself with the other who curries her favor. Her path is still not set. Chapter 64. Violet. I swear the tornado slows as Tarn battles the wind at the eastern edge of the field, flying for the mountainside ahead of us.
It is slowing, Tarn agrees.
She used it to get us here, Theophany's holding it like a nocked arrow, waiting for our arrival. Trees are uprooted a mile to the left, turning into low-flying projectiles that hurl across the field like crossbolts. The tornado may have slowed its progress, but it's doing far more damage along the way. The wyvern launches ahead of us, moving our way, and for a split second, I can't help but wonder if I've just invited Malik to our doorstep. She's a maven, and I'm a cadet. She wields storms with expert precision, and I need a conduit for my lightning. She's already felled Tarn once before. The smartest thing I could do is fly for the wards and save us both, all four of us, considering Zayden and Segale. But I can't leave those people to die, even if it means we're desiccated alongside them. Riders don't run. We fight.
Now, preferably, Tarn remarks, if you're done accepting our deaths.
Not accepting, just calculating. I draw power through my charred veins as the distance between us grows smaller and smaller, gripping the conduit in my left hand and raising my right. Energy rips through me as I release it, dragging the bolt downward and letting go before it can blister my fingers. Lightning strikes as Theophany's wyvern rolls to the right. I missed. My stomach clenches.
Again!
Tarn demands, banking right to follow her down as rain turns to ice. Hail hits and stones the size of peas, then cherries, hitting me with the force of 1,000 blunt arrows as wind tears at my face. But I lift my hand. The conduit shatters. Glass slices into my palm and I gasp in pain as blood wells. No, 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 I can't aim without it.
You have to,
Tarn orders as we spiral downward. Right. Dying up here isn't an option I'm willing to entertain, and I'm not about to let her kill my friends or Zayden either. I quickly undo the strap holding the jagged remnants to my wrist and let what's left of the orb and the fist-sized chunk of ice that destroyed it fall away. My hope plummets with it. I'll have to kill her just like I did those wyvern, with volume. I unsheath my last alloy-hilted dagger and grasp it with my bleeding hand so I'm ready for anything, lift my right hand, and wield again. I miss as she rolls in the opposite direction and begins to climb. We follow, and I draw power again and again, but it becomes harder with every strike. She avoids every single one as we fly along the mountain, hugging the terrain. Taren surges with sweeping beats of his wings, gaining on her. Heat singes my lungs, then burns, then fries, until I feel nothing but fire and rage. Rock flies as I hit the ridgeline to the right, missing her by 10 feet as we fly into the sun. The sun? I jerk my head left. The tornado has stalled midway toward the city, and the sky above us is clear all the way to the east. She's killing the storm to make it harder for me to wield. That explains why I'm burning hotter than before. I jerk my focus back to our prey before it can wander toward the city I'm desperately fighting to save. Do not take more than you can channel, Taren warns as he lunges forward. His teeth snap closed a few feet behind the wyvern's tail. They're too fucking fast. The wyvern dives, curving along the ridgeline to the right, and Taren follows. A roar of unfettered agony fills my head, so loud it vibrates my bones and shrill enough to pop my ears. Sigale! Taren bellows, his wings losing their rhythm, and my heart skips a series of beats. Oh, Malik, no. I hurl myself at the bond, but the wall of ice doesn't just stand firm. It repels me with brute force. Dread nails my stomach to the floor as we lose speed. I hear the snap a second before the shadow falls over us. No, not a shadow. A massive net with weights the size of desks attached along the edges. Taren roars and banks left, but it's no use. Taren! I scream as the net hits, smashing my torso downward onto the pommels and covering every scale I can see. He'd be able to bear the weight of it easily on his torso, but it smothers his wings and the weights. Oh, God, tuck your wings or they'll break! His roar of indignation shakes the rocks loose from the mountainside, but he snaps them closed, tangling in the net. And we fall. Prepare yourself, Taren warns as the mountain flies by in a blur. And Darna, Zayden, Sigale, Mira, Brennan, my friends, they slip through my mind in a whirl of pictures I can't grasp onto, flickering too fast to fully feel. All I can do is ease off the pommels, lean right to spare the inevitable impact to my abdomen as the thick rope of the net digs into my back. You have been the gift of my life, I tell Taren. It is not over, he shouts. We hit with a jarring impact, bone crunching against rock, and my left arm snaps, and the dagger falls. A scream forces its way through my lips as we slide down the mountain, just like the first time we encountered Theophany. The sound of claws scraping over stone consumes my existence as I fight to block out the pain, and Taren swings his body weight, so we skid head first through the trees in an endless, terrifying plunge. I keep my head down to avoid any low-hanging branches as something digs painfully into my ribs, and eventually our momentum slows. Holy shit. We just might survive the fall. Of course we'll survive, Taren growls. Are you hurt? I ask Taren as we come to a stop at what appears to be the edge of the forest. Nothing that won't heal after we free ourselves and separate her sinew from bone. The scent of sulfur fills the air as Taren breathes fire through the net. Wood crackles and net thwangs. Then he surges forward and the net slips just enough for me to sit up through the opening that's clearly designed to hold dragons, not riders. We have to get to Sigale, which means getting him free. But it will take too long to cut through these ropes with the runed daggers I have. And even if I do, I'll still have to wield to kill her without my alloy-hilted one. And I'm already edging burnout. My arm throbs mercilessly, and every breath I take scalds my lungs. Sigale can handle herself. Taren grits out, but bowstring tight tension and worry radiate down the bond as fire streams again, and he fights to get us loose. And the dark wielder descends ahead. Sure enough, Theophany's wyvern glides down toward the field like they have all the time in the world. Like we're pinned exactly where she wants us. gods, she's relentless. It doesn't matter that my arm throbs with excruciating intensity. We have to get out of here right fucking now. Time to use the runes I brought in case of an emergency and pray I tempered them correctly because this is definitely a crisis. We have to get out from under this thing. Cradling my left arm to my chest, I twist from my pack, but something pushes into my ribs as I dig into the bag one-handed. I discard the ones I don't need, then snag the one for softening surfaces and shove it up against the rope. Here's hoping it's right. Magic ripples, and the fibers stretch and give way. My eyebrows rise. It works. Rip what you can, I shout to Tarn. Stay seated so we can fly, he orders, shredding the net on the edges of his spikes, and I take the opportunity to grab whatever's jabbing me in my pocket. Arik's package. I catch the hastily scrawled message on the edge of the package I'd missed when Sloane handed it to me. For when you lose yours, strike in the dark, Violet. What the fuck? The fall has broken the wax seal, and the parchment unrolls as I loosen my grip, dropping a carved piece of gray marble in my lap. A ceremonial-looking dagger with familiar flame-shaped etchings along the hilt. I glance at the accompanying note from the High Priestess of Dune's Temple in Aracia, but the letters blur as the pain in my arm flares and Tarn thrashes to free us. A gift from one servant of Dune to another. I must warn you, only those touched by the gods should wield their wrath. I will pray to her that she need not use it to avoid reacquainting herself with the other who curries her favor. Her path is still not set. My stomach pitches. How would Arik know I'd lose my dagger, let alone think that some piece of rock could replace... Ahead of us, Tarn snaps, and I jerk my attention forward and sheathe the marble dagger out of instinct. Theophany stalks toward us from the tree line, her hair fraying from its braid. And there's nothing patient or amused on her face. I frantically scan what sky I can see. Theophany's wyvern waits in the field beyond the trees, and the only other wings I find are locked in battle over Drathus in the distance, which hopefully means she's alone. How much time do you need to free yourself? I ask Tarn, wrenching the buckle of my saddle free and climbing through the hole in the net. Pain shoots up my left arm, but I pretend it belongs to someone else and keep going. Pain doesn't matter if you're dead. Moments, Tarn shouts. I'm not going to let her kill you like a trussed pig, I retort, fear and wrath fueling me as I scramble for his shoulder, struggling to keep my arm stable until he stills. He must have thrown his claws out before the net hit, because his forelegs are already extended, bracketing his lower jaw. I draw a runed dagger, then slide down, dragging the edge of the blade along his leg as I go. The blade won't cut scale, but the net falls apart in its wake. Brought low by a net, Theophany mocks, striding toward us. How easy it was to catch the pair of them. The pair. The scream. They have Sigale too. Tarn's rage washes over me like acid. I put myself in front of Tarn and open the floodgates to his power, welcoming the scorch of heat and flame in my blistered veins. Silver One, Tarn growls in warning to the accompaniment of the sound of shredding rope. If I burn out, so be it, but she won't touch you, I say aloud just so Theophany will know I'm not fucking around. Have you made your choice, then? Theophany asks, coming closer by the step. I have, I flick my right hand skyward and let the energy snap through me, yanking it down with the tip of my finger. Theophany races 10 yards to the right, moving faster than I've ever seen. You'll have to be, I wield again before she can finish and strike the very place she's standing, earning an immediate clap of thunder. But she's already 20 feet to my left. Faster, she finishes, and I strike again, only for the pattern to repeat. Again and again, my lungs scream as I breathe the very thing I become, heat and power and rage. But she's still too fast for me to catch, and moving closer to Tarn with every failed strike. Almost there, he assures as ropes snap behind me. I need to throw her off her game now. I hold my next strike when she appears 20 feet ahead. Tell me, do you miss Unbreal? Her eyes flare and she startles. Victory. I gather more and more power, spooling it like molten thread. Do you not yearn for Temple? I use the words the High Priestess had on me. Her face twists with an emotion that almost looks like longing, but it's quickly masked with anger. Do you, she counters, or are you immune, having only been touched but not dedicated? She charges forward. Do you know the pain of never being allowed to return? Of knowing that it would sever the very thing that's kept me untouchable all these years. I let a fraction of my power release, striking the ground in front of her, and she skids to a halt. Touched. Shit. The priestess in Unbreal had said that, too. So had the note wrapped around Arik's gift. As a high priestess, you would have had immeasurable power on the Isle. How was it still not enough? Why serve a god when you can be one? Theophany snarls. Putrid fear consumes the bond, followed by another roar that nearly buckles my knees. Sikael. My head jerks upward, my heart lurching against the cage of my ribs as Tarn snarls, his talons furrowing in the forest floor. Don't! Terror clogs my throat as I shout for Zayden, but he can't hear me. Draethys is enveloped in darkness, and the shrieking cries of wyverns soon follow, racing across the field and echoing off the rock above. What? Theophany pivots toward the noise. Shadow spreads like a ripple on a lake, devouring the field in the fury of an onyx storm, and sweeping toward us at a speed that squeezes the hope from my chest, then outright shatters my heart. The pain hits like a physical blow to the center of my chest. He's terrifyingly powerful with Sigale, but not like this. This is the kind of force that ends worlds. And it's almost here. I love you, I whisper down the bond, and the ice cracks, but it's not enough to halt the approaching wave of darkness. Shadow throws Theophany to the ground a second before it rushes over me. Whisper soft against my cheeks, tossing us into pitch black night. Strike! Tarn snaps, and I hear the net give way. Exhaustion grabs hold and refuses to be ignored. I'm too tired, too close to burning alive. What's the point if I can't catch her? Use the darkness, Tarn orders. My heart stutters. Use the very thing that's taking Zayden from me. I never dreamed that taking every possible path to cure him would lead to his choice. The fire devouring me from the inside out threatens to consume my very bones, and for a second, I debate letting it. I couldn't stop my mother, and I can't stop Zayden. I can't save him. Wait. Strike in the darkness. That's what Arik's note said. Like, he knew this would happen. I gasp as all the pieces click in one overwhelming heartbeat. The reinforcements. Telling me to guard Dune's temple, yanking Lynx out of the way before the doors even open to the Great Hall. He knew. He's been manifesting this entire time. He's a fucking precog, I whisper in awe. A real one, not like Melgrin, who can only foresee battles. If Arik wields true precognition, he saw this. And he gave me a weapon made of the fractured temple, a temple Theophany can't step inside. I don't believe in oracles, but I do believe in signets. I unsheathe the marble dagger with my right hand, then mix my pain into the searing power that scorches what's left of my beating heart, lift my broken arm, and release the agonizing burn of energy skyward, and hold it. The continuous strike lights up our surroundings and branches out through the shadow, revealing Theophany's back. She stumbles to her feet and whirls toward me, her eyes flaring wide, and she dives left, smacking into an invisible wall and falling backward. A wall that snarls. Scales shimmer to the same silver blue as my strike, and a small dragon stalks toward Theophany, her head low, teeth bared. And just like that, my stammering heartbeat stabilizes. And Darna. Theophany reaches out her hand, wonder lighting her red eyes. I don't care what her intentions are, she's not getting her hands on Andarna. Pain wraps me in a broiling vice and fire sears my lungs, but I hold the bolt and sprint. Andarna leaving was one thing. Losing her to the touch of a dark wielder is incomprehensible. Hear it, Theophany whispers with reverence, straining toward Andarna. I lunge, driving the dagger straight into her heart. Fire breathes through me until I am char and cinder and agony. She staggers backward and starts to laugh. Then she sees the blood and stops. How? Her eyes flare and she topples to her knees. Stone doesn't kill venom. You were never just venom, I reply. Dune is a wrathful goddess to high priestesses who turn their backs on her. She opens her mouth to scream, then desiccates in an instant. I release the bolt, plunging us into darkness, and surrendering to the fire burning me alive. Violet, Andarna whispers. And then, I hear nothing.
An excerpt from Journal of General Augustine Melgren. The only thing more unpredictable than the volatile province that is Tirindor is her duke. There is a reason reigning aristocracy should never wear black. Chapter 65. Zayden. It was one thing to beckon me, call me, summon me to this hidden sun-soaked canyon south of Drathus against my will, to drag me from the walls of our defenses and force me to walk away from my friends and a city full of civilians. It is wholly another to have wounded and ensnared Sigael. Blood drips among her scales, coursing down her shoulder, and the sight of it soaking the forearm-thick ropes that bind her cuts me to the quick and floods me with power in a way nothing else could. I take it all, then draw more, but she's already depleted from holding off so many wyvern at the walls of Drathus. Wrath courses like a current under the ice I willingly skate onto, cutting my emotions free like the burdens they are so I can be the weapon she needs. She was the first to choose me, to elevate me above all others, the first to see every ugly side of me and accept it all. And every single person in this fucking canyon will die before they remove a single one of her scales. Violet will free Tairn. That's the only outcome I allow to exist. The two Venon standing guard ahead of me at the mouth of the canyon in their ridiculous robes aren't an issue. I'll have them desiccated within heartbeats as soon as Sigael can regain enough power. But the one who walks forward toward Panchik's cowering, traitorous ass, putting himself between Sigael and me, he's a problem. Not because he's more lethal, not even because he's supposed to be dead, but because I can't kill him. I could no more raise a blade to his throat than I could Violet. The bond between Violet and me is the kind of magic that has no explanation. The bond between Berwyn and me is the kind that should never exist. And now that my sage has another sibling he can use against me, I'm screwed. Watch carefully, my initiate. Berwyn says to me over his shoulder, bearing the scar down the middle of his face from when I threw him into the ravine at Besgaeth. I glance past Berwyn, past Sigael and the Venon, to my new brother and the unconscious dragon lying in the valley beyond the canyon, guarded by 7 wyvern. How could he do this? Choose this after watching me stumble and fall over the last 5 months. How could he willingly walk the path I've fought like hell to leave? He's the last person I ever would have expected to turn, and yet here we are. I can't let Sigail die. Can't leave him to stumble down the same path I did. Can't allow my friends to perish because I selfishly want to keep Violet by my side. A clamoring, consuming emotion pounds at the ice, but I can't let it in. She has her own path. No matter what I choose, it's wrong. But only one path leaves Sigail alive. This is not what we agreed to! Panchik shouts, stumbling backward toward his own shrieking, netted dragon. I don't bother looking in their direction. Fucker deserves to suffer for selling us out. Whatever the sage, what Berwyn, does is of no consequence to me. How much information has he sold to the enemy? Certainly enough to lure us all to Drathys. How many times did he give them Violet's location? He dies. The decision is made without debate. Do not lose yourself, Sigail warns, thrashing against the net that has her pinned to the rocky ground 20 feet in front of me. You have not turned as a result of his ploys this afternoon. Do not give in to this one. But he hadn't had her, and now he does. There's no other way, I reply, slowly unsheathing the two alloy-hilted daggers I keep in my thighs, and earning a glare from the dark wielder standing at the tip of Sigail's tail, his fingers splayed in obvious threat. Did you not ask for power? Berwyn snarls, holding two alloy-hilted daggers of his own as he approaches Panchik. Have I not provided? Put those away. We both know you're not going to hurt me. Panchik reaches for the net over his dragon. I'm the only one who can give you access to your son. I have another. Berwyn stabs deep between the dragon's scales and it desiccates, green draining from its scales and shrinking in on itself to a husk. Terror bursts through the ice. Berwyn just killed a dragon with a dagger. How the fuck is that possible? Were you watching? Because that's exactly what's about to happen to yours. He turns to me and saunters towards Sigail as she thrashes futilely under the net. You'll have to channel deep to replace the loss of her power. He lifts the blade. And I don't just skate over the ice. I become it. Stop! Sigail roars, blowing back Berwyn's robes. Do not do this to save me! Do this? It's already done. How fucking dare they pull my dragon from the sky, snare and hurt the one who anchors my existence. I throw my blades into the air, fall to one knee, splay my hand over the canyon floor, and break. In my final act of resistance, I become the very thing I despise. Maybe it's good that I can't feel a single damned thing. I breathe in the power that pulses beneath my hand like a living, breathing creature and exhale darkness. Shadow streams through the canyon, thick as tar and black as ink, blacking out the afternoon sun and turning the space pitch black. Shadow plants my daggers in the chests of the two Venon standing guard. Shadow drags Berwyn from Sigail and knocks both him and my new brother unconscious. Shadow brings quiet. My soul departs like pieces of ash from a fire, flaking free and drifting away as power consumes the space it once inhabited. I am no longer on the ice. I am the ice. And still I feed, tunneling deep into the source of magic itself and surging outward simultaneously, finding the identical heartbeats that mark Wyvern and slicing through scale with shadow, ripping their runestones free. I start with the one who dared set its teeth in Sigail's shoulder, skim past the one who now thinks himself my brother, then destroy the six blocking the entrance to this canyon. Save them. The last remaining pieces of me beg, holding on with teeth and claw to keep from being torn away too. My shadows surge from the canyon over the city, ending every wyvern in the air and on the ground. I'm everywhere at once, shredding the net that ensnares Sigale, tearing the heart from the wyvern who has Dane and Cath backed into a corner, rushing over Imogen as she looks to the sky. I'm at the pass, plucking wyvern off one by one, listening with satisfaction as their bodies hit the ground in front of the people she loves. I stream up the cliffside, fall back at the magic that burns to the touch, and surge north. I love you, Violet's voice cracks the cold, and a silken thread of warmth wedges itself in the opening before it seals shut, locking it in place. No, wait! I grab for that thread with desperate hands, clawing to keep her as more of my pieces are blown away, lost to the void. She is warmth, and light, and air, and love. My shadows consume the valley she stands in, dagger-bared, defending Tairn from the same style of net that caught Sigale. I shove the maven to the ground, regardless of her rank, then slide over Violet with a gentleness that takes all my concentration. I love her. That is the emotion I cling to. The fire of pure power burning at the feeling's edges, and I know if I take it any further, it will be the next and final piece to float away. I bare my teeth and yank my hand from the ground, gasping for a full breath as my heart thunders. I've never felt so strong and so defeated at the same time. This was the only way. I rise to my feet and release the shadows, and the canyon comes into view. Sigale struggles to stand upright ahead of me, blood dripping from the bite marks in her shoulder. The net falls in tatters, and she expands her wings to their full width, taking nearly every foot in the canyon. She glances over the destruction, the bodies, and narrows her golden eyes in silent rebuke. "Will you forsake me now?" I ask. Walking over Berwyn's unconscious body, I'd kill him if I could. Fuck, I thought I had. I wonder how many initiates feel the same about their sage. At least one that I know of. But beyond the physical impossibility of it, he has something I need, and I'm no longer an initiate. "What is there left of you to forsake?" Sigale lowers her head and steam gusts down the canyon, reminding me of the moment she found me in the forest at threshing. "You tell me." I lower the ice and let her in. Her next breath is laced with sulfur, and her eyes widen. "You cannot mean to. You saw what happened. It is the only way." She glances over her shoulder. "And you think she'll help? She loves me. Tairn does not, and you haven't looked in a mirror yet. The red veins branching from your eyes look like her lightning. She'll help. It comes out with a hell of a lot more certainty than I feel. She promised. Even if she agrees, no one will. Someone owes me a favor. He'll never let you near her. Her tail flicks, especially while she lies in a vulnerable state. Is she hurt? The beating organ behind my ribs stumbles, and I reach down the bond that connects my mind to hers, but it's muddled with unconsciousness. Yes. Sigale says slowly, her head moving in a serpentine motion. But she will survive. She pauses. They have completed the wards, but they extend no farther than Draethys. That's good. Bad. Fuck, I don't know. What even am I? Hers. Persuade Tairn, I beg. Everything depends on it. We will ask. Sigale finally says, flexing her claws in the rocky soil. And her decision will determine our fate. Those are terms I can agree to. We're airborne in less than a minute.
Article 5, Section 7, The Dragon Rider's Codex. While cadets are strongly encouraged not to form romantic attachments while studying in the quadrant, lieutenants are permitted to marry whomever they choose upon graduation. Chapter 66. Violet. Violet! Brennan shouts, racing down the steps of Ryerson House and into the moonlit courtyard. Sounds of celebration stream through the open doors. I groggily rise to my feet beside Imogen, and a shape moves in the shadows to the right.
I will not let them burn you, Endarna vows.
What? My head whips her way. Why would my brother burn me? And why in Dune's name would I be sitting on gravel in the courtyard? My thoughts are slow. Something's off. Something's wrong. Are you all right? I ask Brennan as he reaches us.
Am I all right?
His eyes bulge, and he looks me over for injury.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Where have you been?
His voice rises, and a group of riders I don't recognize comes through the gate at our left.
Wilson?
Brennan asks, and the taller one walks our way.
Report.
He glances over his shoulder, quietly. My mouth opens, then shuts.
Where have I been?
The officer's gaze darts over me.
It's fine, Brennan assures him.
Official numbers are 4 riders, their dragons, and 3 elders murdered in the valley in what we're estimating is the last few hours, Wilson says, and we still have 5 riders missing.
4 now,
he adds, looking at me. His mouth tenses. But after that display, we all know Ryerson did this. I bet the other 3 are already dead. My stomach lurches, and Imogen tenses so hard she might as well be stone.
Wait, is this a dream?
I clench my right fist and prick my palm with my fingernails, just enough to feel pain. But I don't wake. The wards are holding Andrathus, as of the last report. But who knows how many of those desiccations during the battle were actually him. Wilson continues, and so far the tally is at 6 missing eggs from the hatching ground. But they're double-checking.
Missing eggs?
I reach for Taren, but the bond feels foggy, like he's asleep.
He needs a cycle of rest to recover, Endarna clarifies.
Recover from what?
He was fine when I last saw him, which was about 5 minutes ago in the woods at the edge of the field where I killed Theophany.
Satan. The Wall of Shadows.
My heart sinks.
What the fuck is happening? How did I get here? Why is my head so hazy? Am I concussed?
You're dismissed, Brennan tells the rider. Keep this classified until we have a full report.
Just because she's your sister doesn't mean she's not the fastest way.
Dismissed! Brennan snaps, and the rider backs away.
Do you know where he is?
Brennan asks me softly once the other rider is fully out of earshot.
Ryerson, you heard what Wilson said. We have dead dragons and riders and missing eggs. And if you've seen Ryerson, I need to know, Violet.
Words fail me.
Why can't I think?
I don't know. I raise my hands to my mouth, and a piece of parchment in my front pocket catches on my arm, then falls.
Brennan catches it.
Cardullo? He lifts his eyes to Imogen.
I haven't seen him since yesterday, she says, her voice low, almost monotone.
Lieutenant Tavis?
Among the missing.
Brennan answers gently, then glances my way, and does a double take.
Holy shit, Violet.
What? I lower my arms.
Garrick is missing too? Who else makes up the 4 riders Wilson mentioned?
Your finger, Imogen says, then stares at the ground.
My finger?
The snap, right. I think I broke my arm. I glance down and stare. My left arm is splinted, and a beautiful gold ring with an emerald the size of my thumbnail sits on my hand.
Oh, gods, I know that stone. It matches the others from the blade of Aracia upstairs on Zayden's nightstand. Is it the missing one?
What is happening right now? I ask slowly.
You don't know?
Brennan lowers his voice. I shake my head. Brennan turns to the paper from my pocket.
This carries the seal of Dune, he says. May I open it?
I nod, gawking at the ring.
It's not just any ring on any finger. It's the finger.
But how? I was in the field battling Theophany this afternoon, and then she desiccated, and I burned myself straight into unconsciousness. Now it's 3 a.m., and I'm in Aracia, and there are murdered dragons and riders and missing eggs? Zayden wouldn't do that, would he? The storm of shadows. My blood chills. How far had he gone? I fling myself down the bond, but there's nothing there. It's gone. Or he's too far away to feel it, I remind myself to keep from panicking. When had he put this ring on my hand? It's an official blessing of your legal, binding marriage, Brennan whispers, stunned, then quickly rolls the parchment. By the head priestess of Dune's temple. To Zayden? Gravity bends, warping everything I thought I knew into whatever this reality is. Brennan nods. My eyes flare. We're married? 1,000 emotions try to force their way through my jumbled thoughts, but the immediate rush of awe trips right over the logic of how. There's no fucking way I'd forget something like that. Why isn't he here? Where did he go? And why? I think the note on the outside is meant for you. Brennan hands back the parchment. I flip the missive over to see two sentences written in Zayden's handwriting. Don't look for me. It's yours now. He's gone. I try to fumble my foggy brain through the overwhelming shock, but I can't think straight. It's like someone has fucked with my... No. My chest draws tight. How long have I been missing? 12 hours, Brennan answers. What did you do? My head snaps toward Imogen, and a deep sense of foreboding takes root in my chest. She slowly lifts her gaze to mine.
What you asked me to. The end. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Onyx Storm by Rebecca Yarros, narrated by Rebecca Soler, with Justice Boulding, Teddy Hamilton, and Jasmine Walker. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold. Thank you for listening to Recorded Books.